Hello, everyone, and welcome to Managed Healthcare Executives' monthly What's on Your Mind podcast. In this podcast series, editors will check in with members of the Managed Healthcare Executive Editorial Advisory Board and ask them what's on their mind. Some of these topics will include the challenges they and their organizations are facing, the uphill battles, and the success stories, the short horizon, and the longer game. We're going to pick their brains to give our listeners valuable information and insight into healthcare today. Hello, everyone. I'm Brianna Contreras, an editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. And in this month's episode, Peter Werwein, managing editor of MHE, connects with the now chief clinical officer of OptumRx Integrated Pharmacies, David Calabrese. In this conversation, David touches on his transition in January as OptumRx's former chief pharmacy officer and market president of health plans and PBMs to his new role as chief clinical officer, where he now focuses more on things such as specialty pharmacy to home delivery, with an overall goal of creating whole patient care. Throughout the conversation, Calabrese also touched on the market's hot topic of insulin prices and behavioral health services within the OptumRx community, among other topics.
So, thanks, David, for joining me today. And we have started this podcast series where we're talking to members of the editorial board, and we've settled on a title of What's on Your Mind. So maybe I don't want to know everything that's on your mind.
No, you certainly don't.
But when you got up this morning and you rubbed the sleep out of your eyes and, you know, thoughts of work and healthcare started to tumble in, what was on your mind?
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you, Peter. I would say what's always on my mind when it comes to my approach to every workday is how do I use my position within the industry, within this particular organization, to help contribute in positive ways to staying ahead of the curve, helping our clients stay ahead of the curve, dealing with the complexities and the ever-evolving environment that we operate in, and how do we help what is all of our ultimate stakeholder, the patient, better understand, maneuver, and better engage in this complicated system that grows more complicated by the day, by the hour, to simplify things for them. So they can achieve optimal value, and so that we can ensure that they are more empowered to participate in their care and to gain the most out of that care. So it's, you know, it's extremely challenging. And, you know, I think we all need, as, you know, as members, constituents in the healthcare community, to try and always remember to keep the patient first and their condition second. So we strive for what I call, and what I'm trying to do within my new job that we'll talk about, is whole patient care. You know, we've had a tendency, I think, as an industry, to put the disease before the patient, and we need to do a better job of putting the patient before the disease. And I'll give you a personal example of this. Frighteningly, I have a brother-in-law right now who was just handed a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. And, you know, for anyone, that's a devastating, completely overwhelming diagnosis. And he's not all that old. He's in his early 60s. He's a blue collar guy, high school educated, carpenter, you know, contractor. And, you know, what he's going through right now is incredibly challenging and overwhelming. Not only is, you know, emotionally is he challenged, but, you know, there's this deluge of information that's coming at him, and, you know, deluge of decisions that he has to make. And, you know, in his case, you know, he's a perfect example of why first thing we need to do is better understand him, better understand his mentality, better understand what's important to him personally, you know, his priorities, his feelings. We need to set realistic views for him as to the road ahead and what the treatment options are and who to go to for what care and whether it should be, you know, medical intervention or pharmaceutical intervention or a combination of the both. We need to make sure we approach care that way first so that once the healthcare team gets involved, then they have a better understanding and appreciation for the person and not the disease. And they can tailor care in a way that fully respects his needs, his priorities, and how he wants to be cared for. And that's what we're striving for. We need to better know people in everything that we do. And that's what I'm passionate about. It's how do we bring information together? How do we connect, you know, the different parts of healthcare together in ways that can drive that type of care for the patient so that we treat them more holistically?
It's interesting. I haven't had a serious illness, but I've wondered whether we are a certain sort of a person without this serious illness. And then you layer in the illness and you mentioned priorities, and I just, it's interesting, like who do you become, you know, as a result of something like a serious diagnosis like pancreatic cancer, you know?
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you're in a new role at Optimize, yes. And I believe the title is Chief Clinical Officer.
That's correct. So,
now, you've been a chief for quite some years.
I've been a chief, I've been a market president, and now I'm a chief again, yes.
So, what the heck is a chief clinical officer? And maybe could you relate it to your other jobs? You were a market president for 3 years,
surely.
And then had a long stretch as chief pharmacy officer. So a little compare and contrast for us on these job titles.
Yeah, sure. So my previous role as chief pharmacy officer was more of a PBM focused role, where I was responsible for things like our P&T committee, our formulary management and strategy, utilization management, clinical analytics, clinical account management and consulting, all of that. It was PBM focused. The chief clinical officer job now works in parallel with the chief pharmacy officer, but my responsibilities now lie with our fulfillment businesses. So everything from our specialty pharmacy to home delivery to our multi-dose packaging pharmacies, our infusion services, our community pharmacies in Genoa Healthcare. All of that is now under my purview, and my responsibilities in this new role are developing a unified clinical strategy. And I talked a little bit about that, you know, that goal, which is that whole patient care type of approach, you know, to be able to build and execute upon a strategy that can help to deliver what I mentioned earlier as a, you know, as a better approach to quality, safety, therapeutic outcomes for the patients we serve. I'll be honest, Peter, it's a fairly unique role in our industry. I don't know of any of our competitors that have this role in place today. So it's a testament, and it's a privilege for me, but it's a testament to our organization and driving what I think would be a more well-rounded, integrated approach to that holistic patient care. And so, you know, now I am working closely with these different business leaders, people who are working in operations, quality teams, compliance teams, in a way to better integrate that activity in more, you know, modern fashion to try and deliver unique solutions around some of the things that are priority today. So affordability for patients, accessibility, health equity, data-driven, you know, quality monitoring and intervention, all designed to, again, advance how pharmacy is practiced within these different operations. So whether it's a focus on polychronics, whether it's a focus on people with rare and orphan disease, whether it's a focus on the growing population of oncology patients and the multitude of drugs that come to market, you know, year in and year out to treat those, you know, we're developing resources that can be better tailored to meet the needs of those different patient populations through these different channels. So, you know, it's something that I'm excited about and something that, you know, we're uniquely positioned to deliver because of the depth and breadth of resources that we have, the different types of pharmacies that we have that are focused, for example, Optum Frontiers Therapy on rare disease, you know, and delivering a different model of care, a full suite of rare disease focused services that bring, you know, those different aspects together in real time to try and create a better model and drive quality and total cost of care value.
Is it a new position or are you stepping into the shoes of someone?
No, it is a brand new position. It's going to be a brand new team that I am bringing together as we speak. I've only been in it for a few weeks. So I get to build it and craft it the way I think is going to be most successful for the organization. Get to, you know, work with these groups, these businesses to establish, you know, the key goals and objectives and the activities that we're going to, you know, help get us to that next level and establishing the performance metrics, you know, that we will monitor and report on to help, you know, ensure that we are successful in the efforts that I'm undertaking.
So, is this sort of a job that is a a convener function where you have different groups doing work in their particular areas and you're getting, you know, the specialty pharmacy to speak folks to speak to people working in this area? And is it that, do you see it that way? You know, I'm just wondering whether it's as opposed to having a, you know, is it sort of multidisciplinary?
It is definitely multidisciplinary in approach. One is, as we talked about, if you think about it today, there are so many areas that are focused on things like quality and safety, you know, across organizations like ours. So it's bringing together in smarter ways through proper governance areas like clinical operations, legal compliance, accreditations, quality. I mean, there are so many different areas that touch how we manage patients, how we drive policies and procedures, how we work together. But oftentimes they're not brought together in a way that needs to optimize those efforts, eliminate duplication, make it easier for the folks working within these pharmacies to understand what their priorities are, what the standards are that we're driving towards, and making sure they have the tools and the assets at their disposal to get there. Secondly, it's helping these businesses to differentiate clinically. So it's helping them build unique clinical programs that capitalize once again on all these different resources, expertise, assets that live not just within OptumRx, but across this, you know, highly diverse and large Optum enterprise, so that, you know, we can ensure that we're building well-rounded services to meet the needs of those different populations that we're focused on. So, yeah, I would say it's a very much multidisciplinary approach. In some areas, it's going to be more consultative than others. In other areas, it's going to be, you know, rolling up my sleeves with my team, digging into those businesses and what makes them tick, you know, what the markets, you know, what the market is calling for. So getting them in front of some of the clients that I supported in my previous role so they understand what the client needs are and so that we tailor, you know, what we're doing to meet the best interests of all parties, but the patient being at the center of everything.
Are you having to do sort of deep dives into areas that you you know, are aware of but don't know well. If you're going to be corralling all these cats, I'm just wondering if there's parts of the business where you have to ask a lot of questions because it just you don't know that territory.
No different than any new job. I think, you know, there's going to be an area, there are going to be areas that I know well, and there's going to be areas that I, you know, haven't had a lot of exposure to. For me, I think learning our infusion business is probably going to be, and is right now, where I'm spending a lot of time, because that is a, you know, it's a complex business. It is under tight scrutiny because of industry dynamics that, you know, have occurred over the last several years, you know, regulation that, you know, that's overseeing and driving how those, you know, that infusion business works. But it's also an area of great opportunity. It's an area where, you know, we've got some great folks doing some great work today that need to be, I think, better supported so that we can drive greater consistency in how we operate from a quality perspective, from a safety perspective. So that's one where I really, you know, probably have the steepest learning curve, but I've got the right people around me. I've got the right people in those teams that know those, that business inside and out, know the operations inside and out. And now it's a matter of, you know, capitalizing on those, you know, on those resources to get me to where I need to be.
One more question about this new position. I'm curious.
Yeah, please.
Did you perhaps propose the creation of this job by virtue of your experience as the chief pharmacy officer and the market president, and you saw a need, or was it somebody else's idea?
Yeah, no, it was, I would think this one was driven right down from our board of directors. As they, you know, we've been very successful both organically and through mergers and acquisitions in growing this broad and diverse pharmacy footprint. And I think they identify, based on what our priorities are as at the UHG level of being a high reliability organization in the industry, they felt that there was this gap, there was this need to bring all these pieces together from a clinical perspective in a more unified way, make sure that we're setting the right tone culturally for these businesses to promote a just culture that promotes optimal quality and safety, but at the same time, making sure that we had someone that could expose the different businesses to, again, these broader clinical assets and help them capitalize on those in ways that will continue to drive their success moving forward.
So I'd like to shift gears a little bit. Talk about things that are in the headlines. Maybe there's a little bit of a PBM cast to these questions. So,
sure.
You know, maybe there's some aspects that relate to this new multidisciplinary job.
Okay.
Or corralling cats is another one.
I should change my title, right?
Yeah. That's a pretty worn out cliche. But let's talk about insulin prices, because it's been in the news so much.
Sure.
And as you know, the Congress and then the president signed a bill that put a cap on insulin prices for Medicare beneficiaries. Lilly slashed their prices significantly.
Yep.
Followed by Novo Nordisk. So I'm wondering what you make of this, and whether you see this as we're entering a period of CMS price negotiation, and whether there might be, after, you know, many years of upward pressure on prices, whether there might be something different going on now, and whether through the combination of government action and then market forces, there's going to be some downward pressure.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely a sentinel event in healthcare right now with the price reductions that both Lilly and Novo Nordisk have come forth with. And, you know, affordability is critically important in healthcare in terms of driving quality of care and therapeutic outcomes. I think as an organization, we're fully supportive and give kudos to both companies for their announcements to lower insulin prices, to place an out-of-pocket max. It's not new to us. You may have saw in the past, we've launched programs to do just that. We have a program that we call the Critical Drug Affordability Program that takes that to a whole nother level, where we're encouraging our clients to set thresholds, maximum out of pocket, in some instances, $0 out of pocket, not just for insulin, but for a variety of other life-saving critical medications that we feel are important to ensure that patients have direct access to. Things like HIV therapies, transplant drugs, certain antiarrhythmics for patients with cardiovascular disorder. There's a whole list. I think it's 15 different categories. So driving affordability is critical. Whether this is kind of the bellwether event that drives, future reductions from other products remains to be determined. I think what some don't realize, and what I think is important to realize, is that there was a financial reason as well as to why Lilly and Novo Nordisk, made this change due to a legislation that was passed in the past called the American Rescue Plan Act. That act eliminated the cap on Medicaid drug rebates starting in 2024. And as such, Novo and Lilly were facing some significant financial impact if they had not reduced those prices, because of the manner in which they've raised prices, year over year, of late, comparatively to the rates of inflation. So, they were going to be subject in January of 2024 to a significant hit financially as a result of that legislation. So it's likely that we're going to see other insulin manufacturers like, Sanofi, to be determined, but could very well be that they'll follow suit.
With those provisions of the American Rescue Plan, were they specific to insulin? Or there be other classes of drugs where there the same thing will take hold?
There could be. But I think insulin especially, and why it was most prominent, insulin, that's probably one drug category where prices have increased so significantly as compared to inflation, that there was the most amount of potential financial risk that the manufacturers were facing. So are there others? Potentially, there are other classes that may be impacted in similar ways. So we may see other manufacturers, but I think, the insulin manufacturers are probably the most heavily impacted.
Let's talk about the other end of the drug price spectrum.
Please.
Which is this ultra expensive drugs like Hemgenix, the gene treatment for hemophilia.
Yep.
It'd be interesting. Do those ultra expensive drugs sort of pose problems that you're dealing with in your current position, and do you see them as being sort of, particularly the hemophilia drugs, but there's other very expensive drugs coming out, numbingly expensive. Do you see them posing sort of categorically different issues, and the toolbox of prior auth and utilization review? It just isn't going to cut it when you have a drug that's $3.5 million a treatment, and God forbid you be the guy who drops the vial and it spills on the floor.
I hear you.
But in seriousness, I'm just, is there any way that this new job relates to these ultra expensive drugs, and do you see them posing a different set of problems?
Yeah, I mean, certainly my new job will be impacted, and this will be an area of focus as part of my work. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we have a healthcare services business that focuses solely on these orphan rare disease cell and gene therapy type of entities. And, you know, with that, you know, my job will be working with those organizations to, you know, combine a more holistic, patient-first, streamlined type of care. It's going to be challenging. You know, we need to make sure that, you know, right from the get-go, that only the right patients are initiated on these therapies. But in order for them to achieve optimal benefit, you know, there needs to be a good deal of support that they're surrounded with, you know, clinical pharmacists who, you know, will serve as an integral part of that patient's care team, you know, delivering the type of support necessary, monitoring the patient's care, utilizing actionable real-time data that can help in terms of not just the financial aspects of care, but, you know, sharing information back and forth with the provider community, building innovative models that can improve, you know, the total cost of care for those individuals. So, you know, I personally, you know, am a proponent of new and innovative therapies that are going to advance care. You know, these therapies do hold that promise. And so now it's a matter of making sure that they're used appropriately in only the right individuals. I think pharma has to come, you know, step up to the plate as well, though. If they're going to charge $3.5 million for a single drug, you know, for the care of an individual, you know, how do we enter into relationships with pharma where they're held accountable as well for the delivery of the outcomes that are going to that are going to justify that type of price tag? And I think we're in a unique position to do that in terms of helping to longitudinally follow these patients, because, you know, these pharmacies don't just serve our PBM, they serve multiple PBMs. They're securing access to these drugs and are being successful in terms of working with the manufacturers to understand, you know, what type of data do we need to be collecting, working with the providers, you know, to understand what support they need from our pharmacies, our pharmacists, and the others that serve as part of the care team, so that we can optimize care and so that we can ensure over time that the drugs deliver upon their promise in improving the overall care of that individual. With time, these drugs may very much, you know, very much prove themselves of value.
Is this, you haven't used the term value-based contracting, but is that sort of what you're getting at here? And my sense is that there's been a lot of ink spilled on value-based contracting and a lot of words said, but I'm not sure whether it's really taken hold. And maybe you beg to differ, but is that what's going to happen with these ultra expensive drugs? You know,
I think there has to be. I think, yeah, I agree with you. You know, value-based contracting, value-based care, you know, buzzwords in the industry for some time now, not a lot of teeth behind them. But in the case of gene and cell therapy, you know, I think we have to get to a point where we hold the manufacturers more accountable, you know, for the value that these drugs deliver. The price tags just demand it. And like you said, you know, we can use traditional tools like prior authorization and other UM to try and manage it. But we've got to come together, the different parts of, you know, the industry, and share accountability in terms of how we're going to maximize the value of these therapies.
So, switching subjects again, but you've mentioned, you've mentioned dealing with the whole person.
Yes.
And in other conversations, that can often mean sort of abandoning the division between the physical health and behavioral health or mental health, and bringing them together in some way, speaking to somebody at Independence Blue Cross, where they, you know, they're they say they're reintegrating behavioral health care. It's going to be all part of one network now. So is there an aspect of this new job that touches upon behavioral health and would make real the integration of behavioral health with the rest of our health?
Yeah, and definitely. So as you may or may not be aware, you know, part of our Optum community is what we call Genoa Healthcare. It was an acquisition from, you know, a few years back. That's what Genoa Healthcare is designed to do. You know, the demand for specialized pharmacy care, especially behavioral care, just continues to grow exponentially with increase in mental health and substance use disorders. And what Genoa is designed to do is to be integrated with the behavioral health community, oftentimes co-located within mental health clinics, and provide a variety of services, mostly driven through the pharmacists, that can drive positive behavioral changes that lead to improved outcomes, lower cost care. And this is, you know, this is a model. Why we bought it is it's a proven model. You may have saw recently a New England Journal of Medicine article where Genoa partnered with the University of Rhode Island, College of Pharmacy, Rhode Island Hospital, Brown University. And the pharmacists were charged with safely and effectively initiating therapy, MAT therapy, for patients with opiate use disorder. And they measured the care that was provided and initiated by the pharmacist with care that was initiated through traditional means in a clinic or physician's office. And what they found was that the patients who were supported by the pharmacy team had a dramatically higher rate of retention in care versus usual care. And I think it was one of the first studies that highlighted, truly brought to life, the value that the pharmacists can bring, you know, to delivering a better outcome for the patient. We've also done other studies with Genoa where, you know, by integrating pharmacies with primary care and specialty clinics, we've seen 10% reduction in hospitalizations, 50% lower readmission rates for behavioral health issues, 90% medication adherence rates. That's unprecedented to have 90% adherence in a behavioral health population. You know, think about the bipolar patient, the schizophrenic patient. I mean, those are extremely difficult patients to try and drive retention, medication adherence with. And these folks, you know, again, based on a whole patient, whole person care approach, getting to know those individuals, being infused in their communities, being infused into the provider's offices, and getting to know those providers and nurses and others that are caring for these individuals, you know, it's a proven model of success, and that's why it's growing the way it is. We're up to over 700 pharmacies now, I think, within Genoa across the country, and growing. So, you know, we're quite proud of that, and I look very much forward to digging deeper into that business as well, because I think there's a lot more we can do now with social determinant of health data and other things that can address these disparities that we know are well prevalent in healthcare today.
Well, we're just about out of time, so I think it is encouraging that something that seems a huge boulder to move, that you see some opportunity here through your new job and some holistic care improving people's health, tackling this behavioral health crisis, behavioral health issue that we have in this country. So sounds exciting. And who knows, maybe you'll have a new job the next time we talk.
No, I'm good. Unless you want to hire me, Peter. No, I'm excited. Literally, I am excited about this role. I do think it affords me, it affords the organization some really unique opportunities to do things to move the needle forward and in healthcare. And it's figuring out where to start first, and then because there are so many things now, floating through my mind as to where I think I can make a positive impact. It's a matter of how do I prioritize and get the, get the ball rolling in doing so. So maybe we can do another interview in a year and I can tell you about all the great things that I was able to accomplish. How's that?
It's a massive curation project you've got ahead of you. So thanks. Thank you so much for the time today.
All right, Peter. Always good to talk to you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of Managed Healthcare Executives' What's on Your Mind podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.